Tonight on The Download, Holocaust survivor Aaron Elster, Australian singer-songwriter Paul Kelly, and another installment of The Swap Meet with Greg Plamm. Now, here's your host, a man who's already done with the slow cooker, Justin Kaufman.
My dreams of becoming a crockpot sensation, impresario, are dwindling. As once again, I made my second meal out of the crockpot this week. It was a chicken noodle soup, real nice. Five-way chili the week before. Both of which tasted like mushy air. People say, well, what's your specialty when you're a cook? I'm like, you know what? My specialty is removing the taste. I'm really good at that. I don't know what it is. I think I'm just too conservative. I get too nervous about over seasoning everything. And so they say, you know, a half teaspoon of this or a half tablespoon of that. And I just find myself constantly in this mode where I'm doing it exact. And even this time around, I'm like, a little bit more. Look at me. Look how crazy I am. And it still comes out. And I'm like, there's carrots and celery and onions and garlic and chicken and noodles and all this stuff. And it all is like, it all tastes the exact same. And maybe it's a slow cooker part. Maybe that's the problem. It's just like, that's the idea. You put it all in a pot. And it just kind of all melds together. But it does not taste anything like, it doesn't even taste like Campbell's. Like, it just tastes like I said, mush. Mushy. Yeah. You know what it tastes like? It tastes kind of like spit. You know what I'm talking about? Mm.
Is there a slow cooker professional?
Yeah, there's a million of them, I think. I think there's, like, cookbooks everywhere. We should get one on. But there's, like, there's constant people who are like, this is the slow cooker guide Bible.
Like, if you Google, like, how come my slow cooker's food tastes like spit? Has anything come up?
I haven't done that yet. I should just search that out. I think I'm just destined to be that guy who stands in line at the freshie inside the Walgreens. Like, that's just going to be my life. I'm determined that I don't have that gene to able to cook from scratch. Maybe I need to get the specialty restaurants inside the Walgreens to cook for me.
No. Didn't you listen to Gail Simmons when you interviewed her last week? She said it's something that you learn. It's not something you're born with.
Yeah, right. Okay.
It's Top Chef Judge.
Her book, I Have the Cookbook, that's next. I'm going to do that next. I'm going to try one. I'll try one next week. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Got a great show lined up tonight. As we mentioned with Roe, we're going to be talking with Aaron Elster, a Holocaust survivor from right here in Lincolnshire. He's featured as part of the Take a Stand Center, which is at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. Tremendous exhibit that has Holocaust survivors answer thousands of questions so that you can interact with the hologram. It's a way to preserve the stories for those stories that are, you know, some of which are no longer with us. So we'll talk with Aaron Elster and talk about the new exhibit and get his story about being 10 years old and escaping from a labor camp. And his family not so lucky. So we'll talk with Aaron coming up here at the big table. Mike Fouché joins me at 7:30 to talk all things Springfield, what's happening down there. Lots going on today. Also at City Hall. In the 9 o'clock hour, Paul Kelly. How about that? Paul Kelly, Australian singer-songwriter legend. 30-plus years, he's won every single award in Australia, and he will be here performing live. So we'll talk with Paul Kelly in the swap meet tonight. Greg Flam's back in the building, ready to evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. All that coming up tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by my man Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Take a quick break, come back, and do the carry out. Stay with us. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. So now the country loves Democrats? All over the place, voters went to the polls and voted Democrat yesterday. Some are saying it's the Trump effect, but we are a very indecisive country that rarely picks one party for too long. So I wouldn't get too excited, Democrats, because you're on the clock now, and that means that voters will get mad at you next time, and the carryout for November 8th, 2020 will be like, conservatives sweep the state houses. You don't see that coming. It was reported today that the Trump administration is holding up the AT&T Time Warner merger until Time Warner sells Turner Broadcasting, the parent company of CNN. Experts in media mergers are perplexed because the merger doesn't create a conflict or change much about the deal. The only thing people are surmising is that the administration is looking for payback against CNN and won't approve them in any deal because of their political belief that CNN is against them, and that by selling them, this would devalue and destabilize the network. If that's true, scary that the White House would get involved in trying to hurt a media company. I mean, I was okay with the funny videos slamming CNN, but not sure how I feel about forcing the parent company to sell them. Maybe if he forced them to sell in gift form, then we'd all be like, yeah, do it. But the critics are livid, citing government overreach on First Amendment issues. No word on timing or next moves. Former President Barack Obama was at the Daily Center today for jury duty, but he was not picked to serve. Wah, wah. I wish I was there for that. I wish I was there for when he was dismissed. Juror number 25, the case involves medical malpractice. What's your thought on that? Well, I created the Affordable Care Act. Pass, next. Juror 26, state your name. I don't know how to spell it. We accept this, juror 26. That was my jury theater. Hopefully Obama said, this is great. This is my favorite thing. Obama said he's donating his $17 check to charity. When the charity was reached for comment, they're like, thanks? I mean, really, at this point? I mean, just take the $17 to Portillo's. Or buy a movie off Comcast. Charity? Poor charity. Hey, we got a check from the former president. Open it! Yay! Oh. Chance the Rapper showed up at city council to call out aldermen for approving the sale of land for a new police and fire academy on the west side. There are some that believe that the city doesn't need a new facility, especially when current facilities like public schools are underfunded. I was hoping for at least a performance, spoken word, something. But he just told aldermen he was confused by their action. But unlike the billions of young people, the aldermen were not buying what Chance was selling. They approved the sale. But man, did the local press love it! I bet the City Hall Press Corps put on a little more makeup than usual today. I mean, you know Phil Rogers was caked up. Chance is going to be here. All the brushes come out. Panera is buying Obon Pan. Huh. And here I thought the whole time they were the same. Well, now they will be. Guess I'm ahead of my time. And now it's time for the Download's overused word of the day. Today's overused word. Referendum. And that was the Download's overused word of the day. In weather, am I reading this right? It's supposed to get below freezing tomorrow night on Friday, low of 24. No. Some places in Illinois today in the outlying suburbs, 22. Not cool, Mother Nature. Not cool. In sports, the Bulls lost to the Raptors last night, but Bobby Portis put up 21 and 13 rebounds off the bench. He played so well that the Sun-Times put out a report this morning citing anonymous Bulls players who say that they have Portis's back over Nikola Mirotic. Mirotic was sucker-punched by Portis in practice before the season started, and 3Cola says he ain't coming back if the team has Portis still on the roster. The Bulls respected that by signing Portis to an extension. Now comes word that the players back Portis. Can I say that I'm not sure if the Bulls are super dysfunctional or if the Sun-Times just has it out for them? Because when the Sun-Times at the core of all the Derrick Rose stuff as well, they're always at the center of the Bulls' chaos. They're either good reporters or they're just looking for it. It just always seems like they have that scoop. Every third week of an NBA season, last year it was Rondo and Wade and Butler. They're just always there. Anyway, turns out that they're not even scheduling practice times together, so the two players aren't on the court at the same time. But something has to give here. Someone has to say uncle, and I know. I'll do it. I say uncle. I give. I quit. Bye, Bulls. Speaking of the Bulls, ESPN did a huge article video piece on Jimmy Butler, who said he has the February 9th game at the United Center circled on the calendar, and every time he scores in that game, he's going to glare at the Bulls bench. He also said that he knew it was going to either be his way or Hoiberg's way, and the Bulls chose Hoiberg. We'll see how history judges that one, huh? And then he fell out of a canoe, and ESPN pundits just loved it. It's like, think that was half of ESPN today. Look at Jimmy Butler falling out of a canoe. Oh, God. Okay. Coach John Fox talked to the media, and now we know what's up with Danny Trevathan. Drum roll, please. He hasn't been at practice because calf strain. Yep, he hurt himself against the Saints, and he just kept a low profile about it. Didn't practice today. Also, Martellus Bennett, the black unicorn, he won't play on Sunday for the Packers or ever again. The Packers cut him today, saying that he didn't disclose a medical condition when he signed his big contract. Yeah, he's a football player. My guess is that there's a couple of tears in every muscle the dude has. But again, hey, I'm not sweating it. He'll land somewhere else in the Packers. They lose another star, and my smile gets bigger. It sucks, doesn't it, Packer fans? Now you feel we're connected. We're connected right now. I'm usually very critical of this year's Bears. I get it. I mean, have you watched them? But 3-5 at the halfway point, it's not bad. And they beat the Steelers, who I just heard are considered the AFC frontrunners for the Super Bowl. The Carolina Panthers, who are still in the playoffs. The Baltimore Ravens, who are above 500 and should have beat the Falcons in week one. Not bad. They just need to get Trubisky some experience in learning how to win. I'm excited for the second half. And if it doesn't work out, you fire Fox and hire John Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh. John, Jim, who cares? Someone named Harbaugh, right? I'll take either, right? It was actually a mistake. It should be Jim, but I'm like, yeah. My brain just went, that's not a bad call either. But John, take either. Jason Hayward won the Gold Glove last night. He promptly accepted the award and weakly grounded it to second. And finally tonight, aldermen are looking into ticketing citizens for, quote, distracted walking. This is when you walk through a crosswalk on your phone, not paying attention. If they caught doing it, $500 fine. Oh, sure, my idea of ticketing restaurants for offering up small plates is laughed out of the building. But this one has merit. What's next, diapers on horses? Or my better idea, diapers on pigeons? Think about it. That's the carryout for November 8th, 2017. Hey, it's going to get cold. We have stew, chili, and blankets made out of bread. Yep, it's a new thing. We're trying it out. We're not sure if it's going to stick. It works, just don't get it wet. Nobody likes the bread blankets? Mike Boucher is coming up. He's in Springfield tonight. We'll talk to him about all the action that's happening in the Capitol, also here at City Council, with Chance the Rapper. At 8 o'clock, we'll talk with Aaron Elster about his story of being a Holocaust survivor. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martyr, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well, my friend. I heard you take a little shot at, who was it that won the Gold Glove today?
Jason Hayward.
Was he part of your fantasy team? Didn't live up to expectations this year?
Every time I see Jason Hayward up there, I'm like, this is going to be big. And there's a weekly grounded ball to second base. That's out number two. But then he's always in the game because he's a great fielder.
There's a dribbler. That one my son could handle. And he's only two.
Looks like he got fooled on that one little ground ball to second. That's going to be out number one.
I'll tell you what, man. He takes a big cut. He takes a big cut.
We should put together a montage of all the ground outs to second from Jason Hayward.
Yeah.
He started the season pretty well, didn't he?
I think he did, yeah.
He did, and then he got back into Hayward, he got a little bit of Haywarditis towards the end of the season.
Well, you know, old habits die hard.
That's right. Thanks, Rob. It's download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coppin. Well, as much as there was a big hubbubaloo when it comes to politics and elections last night, it didn't seem to have much of an effect on Chicago and Springfield. It was work, back to work, business as usual, both in the Capitol and at City Council. Mike Fouché joins us every Wednesday from the Daily Line. He is in Springfield tonight. Mike, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Woo, Springfield.
He's so excited. All right, so let's get right to it. I guess we start in Chicago. I mean, all of the focus was on the idea that Barack Obama was at the former president was at the Daily Center, and across the street, Chance the Rapper was dressing down aldermen. Let's talk about the Chance story. This is about, and this is what his goal is to raise awareness about the new police and fire academy that is being built on the west side. Well, there is some opposition. As people say, we just don't need to do this.
Right. And so let's cut to the chase on this right away, though, which is that all the aldermen voted to all the aldermen save one, Carlos Rosa from Logan Square, voted to support the city buying the land in order to build this West Side Police and Fire Training Center. But what Chance was saying is that there are many people in the community that don't want this. And then rather than spending $95 million on buying the land and then building this golden facility, we should be spending money on other things like schools, like education, like mental health centers. And he pointed out one school down the street from where the mental health, where the police fire training center will be, or high school or academy, he was able to give $100,000 to, and they've had all kinds of improvements. And he said, look, you know, why don't you just give some extra money to high schools like that, and you can get even more improvements. They don't need a swimming pool or a museum like you're going to have in the police and fire academy.
Yeah, and we know this, I mean, from having this conversation, that it's not that simple. Obviously, there are budget categories and areas, and CPS is its own entity. It's not, it's really not a either-or situation when you're talking about money. But there is a bigger question about what the city's investing in and if citizens should play a bigger role when we just go through all the, every year we go through budget crisis after budget crisis and find ourselves at the on the losing end of tax increases.
And he does make a point, which is that the city has decided that it's going to be spending money on you know, this new facility, and there's desperate need for spending in other places. But you know, from what Mayor Emanuel said and what a lot of aldermen agree is that, look, you know, if we're going to be improving policing in Chicago, we need to be improving training. And the best way to do that is to have a top-notch training facility. The current police academy is old. It's crammed. They don't have a lot of good equipment. You know, they oftentimes have training sessions in hallways. So, I mean, it definitely is necessary in order to get a new place. You know, the question is the city doing it economically? I don't know. I mean, they're definitely going for a grade A golden facility.
Up to this point, there has been mild opposition or at least protests to this move. I mean, I've had press releases sent to me and others talked about a little bit on the show at certain times, but it hasn't been really galvanized. You haven't had a real protest movement when it comes to building a new building for police and fire. But Chance the Rapper gives face to this movement.
He does. And, you know, he started calling out individual aldermen. He called out Alderman Burnett from the 27th Ward, a West Sider, saying Alder Burnett doesn't get what people really want. And, wow, you know, what would happen all of a sudden if Chance the Rapper started targeting aldermen in his tweets? You know, I think that would be kind of an amazing thing. And he seems to be getting more and more involved with city politics. We might have a Chance the Rapper factor that could go into the 2019 election.
Oh, man. If you listen to his music, he does talk about, they say Chano for mayor, maybe I should. Something interesting.
Right.
But there is something to be said about this idea that, and it goes back to beyond Chance the Rapper, but it goes to this idea that in this new world order that we live in 2017, it's not going to be like it was 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago, where the mayor and the alderman, even the alderman, they rubber stamped. I mean, there was 49-1 or whatever the actual committee vote was. I don't know if it was a full council, but just the committee. The idea that there is going to be more pressure put on city government, on the decisions they make with our money.
Well, you know, sort of. There's a lot of talk about it, but I don't think anything a whole lot has really changed. You know, we're still looking at a situation where there's going to have to be property tax increases, and we're committed to a series of property tax increases through, I think, 2054 in order to pay off the police and fire pensions. We have all these other obligations that we have to deal with. And it doesn't necessarily seem that there's really that much of a change in terms of a process. I mean, objectively, in a lot of ways, there's less public input than there used to be. I mean, you know, one of the things that Mayor Daley was really good at was taking comment from people from communities that were upset with him. And Rahm Emanuel does not openly solicit comment or conflict. He shies from it. So, you know, I think that actually is a significant change from the way things used to be.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line down in Springfield tonight. We just talked to City Council. We're going to make a transition to Springfield. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to the right to work bill, the override that failed once again by one vote. Also, gun dealer restrictions and, of course, sexual harassment training, which began, I think it starts either today or tomorrow. Mike Fouché on the download every Wednesday. Stay with us. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line with us here on the download, 720 WGN. We're talking all things Chicago County, state politics. We'll skip county this week. We'll go right to Springfield because that's where Mike is at tonight. A big day. Let's start with the right to work bill. This was something that, you know, last week was a week before that, that the House tried to override the veto on right to work zones. They fell short by what, one vote? They thought they had it all lined up to do it again, and it fell short by one vote again. What's going on, Mike?
What's going on is that there's been a tremendous amount of pressure from labor unions in order to try and pass this. This is an anti-right-to-work bill. This bans the idea of creating so-called right-to-work zones where you would municipalities would be able to say that unions can't collect dues in these areas if their workers are working in these areas. But it's kind of a fallacy since the one town that actually tried to do it was found unconstitutional that they couldn't right. do it. And the Attorney General from Illinois says, Attorney General Lisa Madigan says, she doesn't believe that they're legal anyway. So they're probably not really going to happen. It's really a polemic battle. And the House had passed this back in the spring. The House and the Senate had passed it back in the spring and sent it to the governor, and the governor vetoed it.
He vetoed it, right.
And 2 weeks ago, they tried to pass it in the House, and it failed. And then they tried again. And really, what was kind of amazing is that there almost all the votes were the same, except two Republicans actually switched their votes back and forth, and it one went to a yes and one went to a no, and it seemed like that was done as a switcheroo in order to give them a little bit of cover with labor unions and their own organizations, so that they in their own districts, so that they can say that yes, I did actually vote for this, or you know, they get to say both. I voted for this and I voted against it. But, you know, what is surprising is that the Democrats just couldn't line up the votes in order to pass this the second time. And, you know, it's a pretty good example of the various things where there's just this amazing hidebound set of things that are going on in the House. And the other was there was a lot of expectation that there was going to be a bill called in the House that would limit gun dealers and create a whole new set of regulations for gun dealers in Illinois. That wasn't even called because there just weren't enough votes for it. That there was a lot of expectation that that they would be able to get together enough votes at the last minute. They had a huge rally. They had about 150 people bust in and were hanging out in the gallery, yelling and cheering during the session, but they just couldn't get enough votes together. And that's because there's this incredible rural urban divide on guns in Illinois. And there just aren't enough people who are concerned about the proliferation of guns in Illinois in order to actually make legislation like that move.
Well, I mean, I asked the question, will there ever be a time, because it seems that the way that our political structure is set up, the way that we do bills, and we've seen this both in D.C. and in Springfield, where people will go behind closed doors and they put it all together and they write the 100 pages or whatever it takes to put it together and they get it out there and then they do all of this stuff behind closed doors. Would it be beneficial for a society for us to be able to hear our lawmakers talk and debate about gun control, to talk and debate about these restrictions or the bump stocks or the other things that just seem to not have enough votes, so we never really talk about it?
Well, there actually was a very, very healthy debate 2 weeks ago about the bump stock and the bump stock bill, which also had another aspect, which was trigger modifications, modifying a gun so that it could fire faster. And that debate, you know, I know it doesn't sound like long, but it went for about half an hour on the House floor, which is a long time for something like this. And that there was a lot of discussion and a lot of viewpoints came out. And it was, it became very clear that this was really, debate was not really something that mattered. You weren't going to be changing any minds on the House floor. You know, people came to this debate with their own preconceptions and their own ideas about the way things need to be done. And, you know, one of the things that, that strikes me is that, you know, more and more we have these situations where the polarization of politics just continues, and there's this idea of we're going to smash the opposition, we're going to really show them, we're going to really teach them something. But, you know, that's not really how people tend to move votes. I mean, one of the greatest stories that I've heard, and I think is really incredible, is one of the things that the proponents for equal marriage, the gay marriage bill a couple of years ago, one of the things that they did was that they went out and sought out children of that had grown up in neighborhoods or people that knew legislators that were gay. And they had these people approach the legislators, conservative legislators, and say, look, I want you to know that if you don't vote for this, I'm not going to be able to have a family. I'm not going to be able to have all these rights. All these things are going to affect me.
You see the implication, right?
And you can see the implication. And that was incredibly effective. And but in order to find these people took a great deal of work. You know, you had to go and identify, well, who are people that these legislators know? And they had to go through and do it each for each person. It was an enormous amount of field work and an enormous amount of organizing, and took a long time. But it was incredibly impactful, and it was very personal, and it was very much about the implications, as you said.
Yeah.
And that really isn't the sort of thing that's done very often.
Yeah, I'd like to see that happen. As we wrap up here, House members got their sexual harassment training. The Senate is tomorrow. Mike, how did it go? I mean, this is something that obviously came out of everything that's happening and the light that's been shined on state politics and sexual harassment. I mean, was it the same kind of sexual harassment you get like working for a corporation?
Yes. It was training done by a part of a state agency from the Department of Human Resources. And they do these trainings throughout the state for all the different agencies. And they came in and there was a PowerPoint presentation and the members, you know, listened to this. They all did it in their separate caucuses. So the Democrats did it in one and the Republicans did it in another. You know, that's how the House did it. It was very somber, And everyone was very serious about it. I think that legislators are anxious to put this chapter behind them and see if there is an improvement. And, you know, hopefully there will be. But, you know, for all of the talk about this and the fact that legislators and their staff are getting training, it really isn't doing anything for another huge chunk of Springfield life, which is all the consultants and lobbyists.
That'll be the next thing, because this is obviously a step forward, but you're right. There's a whole culture down there that needs to be examined. Mike Fouché, DailyLine.net, joins us every Wednesday here on The Download. He is in Springfield tonight covering the State House. Travel back safe, and I know that there's a couple, at least tomorrow, they'll have some stuff. But after that, travel back, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot. Good to talk to you.
All right, coming up in this hour, we are going to talk with Aaron Elster. Spent years in a Polish ghetto. It was liquidated in 1942. He's going to talk about his story, and as well as being featured as a hologram in the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie. He's one of the 13 featured. Seven of the Holocaust survivors featured in this exhibit are from the Chicago area. Aaron is from Lincolnshire, so we'll talk with him, and also Shoshana from the program. That's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. 9 o'clock hour tonight, Paul Kelly Paul Kelly is the Australian singer-songwriter legend. Has really one of the most popular Australian musicians of his generation. He's a great singer-songwriter, and he's had crossover here in the United States. He was just in town, so we'll have him here. And he will be performing, so that's awesome. We'll get some live music. Also, we'll talk about Voices for Illinois Children. They are an organization. I've known them for years, but it's really interesting because I read this whole story that the social service agencies, you know, we kind of put all that to bed. I was going to ask Mike about it, but, you know, the idea that the budget got passed, Rob, you know, there's like, everything is okay now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's such a backlog, but there's also this moment where the governor just recently in the last month has determined that the budget that was passed is out of whack, and he has the authority to withhold some funds to make it balanced. And a lot of those funds, this was a Better Government Association report that actually came out last week, that said a lot of those funds are to social service agencies who were counting on it. So if you're a social service agency in Illinois and you saw the number, you're like, oh, thank the Lord, we've been, you know, using credit over the last two years to make it happen. Well, the governor is withholding some of those funds their office says, well, it's moderate, it's not that big of a deal, but they're concerned that they're not going to get all the money that was promised to them from the state of Illinois. So we'll talk with them about that coming up. And also tonight, Greg Flam and the Swap Meet, where we evaluate your memorabilia, collectibles, and your junk. I saw Roger Badish cleaned out his closet. And I also saw Beth from sales. Beth had she put on Facebook a picture of Jason Bateman when he was really young,
uh-huh.
A signed picture she had. She had written a letter to Jason Bateman. And so I was like, I was going to ask Greg about that.
It's got to be worth something.
Yeah, because he's a little kid. He's like Silver Spoons.
Yeah.
You know, that's the classic Bateman. People forget about that. They always want to give Ricky Schroeder all the love for Silver Spoons.
Who didn't want to live in the Silver Spoons house? I mean, honestly, I watched the show just because I fantasized about it all
the
time.
Didn't he have a race car bed?
Race car bed, yeah. And the dad rode it in like a choo-choo train and all that kind of nonsense.
Such good stuff.
Yeah. That's good viewing right there.
That's the Silver Spoons. So we'll find out what that photo is worth coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new center just opened at the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie. It's called the Take a Stand Center, and it features holograms of 13 Holocaust survivors telling their stories. Its goal is to create a way to give the visitor the unique experience of interacting in person with a survivor. And this is very important because the stories of what happened in Eastern Europe during World War II have to be told, preserved, and archived as a reminder of what horrors have come before. Of the 13 featured, 7 are from the Chicago area, including Aaron Elster. Elster spent years in a Poland ghetto until it was liquidated in 1942. But before he could be moved to another camp, Aaron escaped, and he hid in various Polish farms and attics till the war ended. He was 10 years old. He came to America in 1947 with his sister. I'm pleased to welcome tonight's Shoshana Buchholz-Miller. She is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. And also, it's a pleasure to have Aaron Elster at the big table here in studio as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Elster, thanks for being here. Shoshana, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with you, Shoshana? This is a big deal for you guys because you've been working on this for a while, the Take a Stand Center. This is, as much as it is a new part of the museum, it's also a new way to tell this story. Talk about the origins of where this idea came from.
It's really an incredible way to bring these stories alive. So we have partnered with the USC Shoah Foundation, and one of our board members, Jim Goodman, had been thinking about how it would be amazing to bring Holocaust survivors to the public through holograms. And he had this brainchild and happened to be sitting next to, at an event, Stephen Smith, who runs the USC Shoah Foundation, who was having the same idea. And so it was amazing synergy. The incredible part of it was that not only are the survivors holograms, but they use interactive technology. So the visitor can ask the recorded survivor a question, and the survivor will answer. So you are having a very lifelike conversation with the recording.
How important is it to keep up with technology when you want to tell the stories of survivors? Because I would imagine that over time, you need more and more celebrated technology to get the story across, especially to a younger generation.
I think there is a truth to that, but I think the most compelling thing for us is that we are blessed to have survivors still with us and able to tell those stories, and we know that that is the most compelling way to tell the story of the Holocaust, right. But we know we won't have that forever. And to be able to use this technology to create this really empathetic engagement between a visitor and learning the story of the Holocaust has been really a game changer for us.
It's a tremendous way to archive the stories. Mm-hmm. As generations and generations, they tell their stories and we move on from those generations, this is a way for it to be almost a way to tell these stories when some of the survivors are gone.
That's exactly what our goal has been. And we have been testing these stories with school groups over the past few weeks as we've been getting ready for our opening. And what's incredible is to see how the school groups will ask the recording a question saying, tell me about when you did this. Tell me about when you were in hiding. Because they really feel like the person is there. The technology falls away, and it's about the story and that human connection.
13 Holocaust mm-hmm. survivors are featured. 7 are from Chicago. Is that mm-hmm. on purpose because the museum is here in Chicago, or is that just how it played out?
Yes, we were very lucky in our partnership with the Shoah Foundation that's based in California. That part of this partnership together was that we would be able to have 7 of our survivors tell their stories and to be able to include different experiences to kind of give a suite of experiences to the visitor.
What are some of the featured experiences? We're going to talk with Aaron in just a moment mm-hmm. here about his experience. But when you talk about a suite, what's the diversity of story?
Right. So telling a story about a Holocaust survivor, they're varied in their stories. So we have a couple of survivors who survived Auschwitz and other concentration camps. One survivor is from the former Soviet Union. So he lived in the Minsk ghetto for a number of years and then escaped with his mother. We have a couple of survivors who lived hiding as in plain sight, acting as non-Jews with false papers. So we have this, and we have one who was a very young boy who was hidden in a concentration camp for a number of years. He was a very young child survivor.
Well, Aaron Elster is with us tonight, a survivor who has written a book about his experiences. He's also featured in the new Take a Stand Center. I guess it's a center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We wanted to say it's an exhibit, but a center. You're featured. You're one of the holograms. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk with Aaron about his experiences, not only for this exhibit, but also for in your life. So Aaron Elster in studio as well with Shoshana Buchholz-Miller. She's the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. And they're my guests tonight at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, we are talking about the new Take a Stand Center at the Illinois Holocaust Museum right here in Skokie. Shoshana Buchholz-Miller is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. And also Aaron Elster is featured in the new exhibit, which essentially holograms your life, your story. You are a hologram. How does it make you feel that you are 3D at this point?
Well, I'll tell you this way. When 3 of us were initially asked to go down to California to do the holograms, there was some hesitation, and then yet we were looking forward to it because this felt like we're going to leave something for the future, because most of us know we're not going to be around here very long. It was a trying experience because you had to sit in a chair for 5 days and answer over 2,000 questions.
Wow.
However, when it's all said and done, I feel humbled. I feel proud. I feel an awful lot of compassion for what we did because, in essence, when I'm no longer here, I'm leaving a legacy for the future because it's important that young people understand what humanity, what human beings are capable of doing to one another. And I see thousands and thousands of kids during the course of the year. I tell them my story. However, I encourage them to be upstanders, to make a difference, that each and every one of them can help change this world for the better. With the slightest little goodness, because you join it all together and it's a big thing. I also tell them they're smarter and tougher than they give themselves credit for. And I truly believe that they can overcome all kinds of adversity and become the dreams that they have of themselves. And the reason for that is because I did things as a 10-year-old.
As a 10-year-old.
Now, looking back, it's difficult for me to believe it, that I was able to do what I did because I wanted to live so desperately.
You and your family were in a Polish ghetto. You were born in 1933, so you were young. You started in this process of, what, 5-6 years old?
When the war broke out, 1939, seven?
When it all started and the war broke out and you were with your family in that ghetto, what memories do you have? Do you go that far back? Do you go to 8 years old?
Absolutely. Yeah. I have memories that are 78 years old. But you can't ask me what I had for breakfast today because I don't remember. But 70 years ago, 75 years ago, certain things make an impact on your life that is with you forever. I have mourned my parents' demise for years. But I had a little sister by the name of Sarah who was 6 years of age, who died such a horrible death in a death camp called Treblinka. I've stopped mourning for my parents, my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, but Sarah is still 6 years old and she lives. Mm. She lives within me forever.
When you were so young, at 8 years old, 9 years old, did you know what was happening? Did your parents shelter you in a form that when in the ghetto?
We knew rumors, because Treblinka was only 17 miles away from our town. And the people that were pulled out supposedly for work to Treblinka, nobody ever came back. Once in a great while, somebody would escape, come back and tell the people in the town, and most wouldn't believe it. Because humanity, human beings will not accept finality, that they're going to die. It's the nature that we that we have. So we did know. Plus the fact they created a ghetto. They took a 5-block area in my town, where normally 500-600 people lived. And if you lived outside the area, they'd come to your house and tell you got 15 minutes to move into the ghetto. And what happens? They establish rules. Each room in the ghetto had to contain 7 people. We were put on rations, 486 grams of food. Doctors not allowed to practice medicine. No medications, no soaps. Suddenly people start to die. They die of typhus, they die of hunger. And as a kid, maybe 8, 9 years old, you walk the streets, you see dead people lined up against building, waiting for a detail to come, throw them in a wagon, take them into the back where the potato field was and bury them. So you lived with that. And this is where the fear was created in me, the need that I had, I wanted to live so desperately.
When were you separated from your family?
1942.
So when they liquidated the camps...
They liquidated the
ghetto. The ghetto, excuse me.
We went into hiding. I can tell you some things that happened in the hiding place. I don't know if you want to know about it or not, but there must have been 35 people in that one-room hiding place on the second floor of our building. And I tell you this because people don't understand how... People can do certain things to other people. There was a mother sitting where you're sitting, breastfeeding her child, and the child began to cry. And everybody around this poor woman tells her to shut that kid up so we're not discovered. And if you can imagine a mother placing her hand on a child's face and begins to exert pressure and suddenly the child's legs kick and flail and then it's dead. It's quiet. And in spite of it, we're discovered. We're dragged out of our hiding place, lined up against the wall of the building, chased up to the marketplace. And I wish I had the words to describe to you the fear, because I knew I was going to die and I know it was going to be painful. Just don't have the words to do that. And I'm sitting in the marketplace one line behind the other of people that they dragged out of their homes and so on, waiting to be transported by train to Treblinka. And I'm crying and I'm begging and I'm pleading with God to save me. And I says to my dad, what should I do? What should I do? He tells me to run. Initially, I thought, how can I run? They're going to see me. They're going to shoot me. But he says, run. So I crawled behind the lines of people on my stomach, you know. And then at the end of the marketplace where the street was, there was an open sewer. I crawled in there, kept crawling till I felt I was out of sight. Stood up, started running, and got out of the ghetto. So where do you go? I wound up in the woods because it was still fairly decent weather. And then in the mornings, I would get up early, I mean early, before the farmers, and steal some of their potatoes that they buried. And those potatoes became my diet. And you're scared.
Yeah.
And you think everybody wants you dead. Now you think, you know, everybody wants you dead.
And you're 10 years old.
And you're 10 years old. And how do you do this as a 10-year-old? I talk to young people that are 12, 13. I don't know how the hell they would survive, but there's something within us. And that's why I tell this or I say this to young people. You either give in to your pain and you die, or somehow you absorb the torture and the pain and the hunger and the cold, but you keep your mind, you keep your soul, and somehow, is it God's help or what?
My guest tonight at the big table, Aaron Elster, is a Holocaust survivor. We're talking about his experience. It's on display in hologram form at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Skokie with the new Take a Stand Center, where you and 12 other survivors are in hologram form, where visitors can interact and ask you questions. Also in studio with us tonight, Shoshana Buchholz-Miller, who is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the museum. We'll do this. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation with Aaron Elster in studio. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, we're talking with Aaron Elster, Holocaust survivor, as well as Shoshana Buchholz-Miller. She's the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. It's a brand new center, the Take a Stand Center, which takes 13 survivors, puts them in hologram form so the visitor can interact, ask questions, and have a conversation with Holocaust survivor. Aaron Elster is featured in the new center, and he's sharing his story with us tonight. Before the break in the news, we talked about running and the concept of not knowing where you're running and having to go out to the woods to find food. But it's not just running. Half of it or more is hiding. You farms until the winter, and then you had to come back in, and you had to hide in attics, a story that's well-known around the world about hiding. Talk about that experience, being alone, being on your own.
Well, I want you to picture this, if you would. You're 10 years old. You have very short pants on with a little jacket. You're afraid to knock on farmers' doors because you don't know who's going to be friendly and who's not going to be. And, you know, there was a lot of complicity. But out of total desperation, you knock on a farmer's door one night and you plead for his kind mercy. The man takes you down to the cellar of his house, and his daughter, maybe 12, 13 years old, brings you some hot cooked milk with potatoes in it. That act changed my whole perception of life, my whole perception of whether I'm going to survive or not. Suddenly, it gave me such an elation. I felt maybe this man will keep me. Maybe they'll make me part of their family. And you have such great hopes. And then a few hours later, he calls me up from the cellar and he tells me he's afraid of his life. He's afraid if the Germans find out he's helping a Jew, they'll kill him, his wife, his children, they'll burn the house down. And that's a fact. But what he said to me stays with me forever. He tells me, why don't you just give yourself up? Because there's no longer any future for people like you. You're not supposed to exist. But I wanted to live. I don't know where I got the audacity to insist on that. I don't know, but I did. I would do and I did anything in order to survive. Now, picture yourself 10 years old, there's 2 feet of snow on the ground in the fields, and you're trying to make your way back to the town to get to that Polish couple that you wanted to. And every time you take a step, your foot gets stuck. And you take another step, and then you got to pull the first foot out. And you're freezing. You can't feel your hands. You can't feel your feet. And you continue. How do you do it? I don't know, but you continue. And then I finally got to a destination. People that knew my parents, that I knew, knocked on a door. She saw me, Mrs. Gorski. Started screaming at me for coming there. I says, my mother told me that you would help me. You're my last chance of trying to stay alive. And I pleaded and I cried and pleaded so desperately. She finally said, okay, I'll let you up to the attic, but only for a few days. And then you must leave and find your mother again. And she took some straw, put it in a sack. And if you can picture the attic, the roof is slanted like that. It's made out of tin plates. The floor is cement and dirt. And you have no blanket. You have no other clothes. And it's dark in there. And it's winter. And it's so cold. And you're hungry. And you're scared. And you feel that the whole world wants you dead.
As a 10-year-old, it's hard, like you said, even in the conversation, it's hard to fathom. I can't wrap my head around it.
Neither can I at this stage of my life.
Where was your family at this point? As a 10-year-old in that moment, do you just figure they're gone?
We were pulled out of a hiding place. My dad, my baby sister Sarah, who I can tell you about, chased up to the marketplace. My mother was pulled out of line. We didn't know what was going to happen to her, but found out later that she was put on a work detail. Her and about 50 others, their job was to clean up the ghetto, pack all belongings that the Germans wanted. And my poor little sister, Sarah, after I ran away, wound up going to Treblinka with my dad. And people don't understand, when you die in a gas chamber, you just don't die. It takes 15 to 20 minutes before you're finally dead, and you're choking. And if you're little, bigger people climb on top of you in order to reach out any fresh air that still exists at the ceiling level. People do this to one another. And that's the picture I carry of my little sister, Sarah. And it's never gone away.
The war ends. You're still in hiding. At that point, take us to that moment. The idea that perhaps all of the thoughts that you had, that you weren't going to live.
I never gave up. Don't know where I got that or where I learned that or anything. I always felt somehow that I was going to survive. I don't know how or why, but I did. And frankly, I think this is what helps you survive, because you're convinced that it's going to get better. Then maybe you'll even find your parents. You dream. You take your mind away from your misery, and that's how you exist. Now think about the summer for a second. 95 degrees. You're laying right underneath the roof. You can bake on it. The air is sucked out of that attic. And you lay there, still, totally still, soaked with sweat with the slightest movement, hoping to survive till evening came. And then you hope to live for another day. You live for a day at a time, an hour at a time. So, you know, winter was terrible. And summer, when it got hot, was just as bad in a different way. And you sit there, have nobody to speak to. You can't read. There's nothing to read. You don't know how to read or write. And you're full of lice and all kinds of vermin, and you spend hours trying to delouse yourself because, you know, you spend 2 years, close to 2 years in that attic, never washed, never changed clothes, never cut your hair, never brushed your teeth, and you survive.
You tell this story not only in the hologram, but you wrote a book about your experiences. You have also, you speak to children, to others. You're a guest speaker in different places. When you're in the throes of telling this story, like you are right now, to go back to something that many of us in this room that are listening right now cannot fathom, cannot understand, and have never been in any close scenario to what you're describing. Where are you at in the place when you go back 60,
you have to ask
years?
That in two questions. If you ask me what I did 20 years ago when I was speaking, it was extremely painful. You open up your heart and you bleed in front of people. You truly do. And then time has a means or a way of subsiding that pain. But then you're concerned that you're just going to tell a story. And if that's the case, they might as well read a book instead of listening to you. So you have to continue speaking in an emotional way. And I do. I'm very fortunate. I'm able to reach young people because I think I speak on their level. So emotions don't go away. They lighten up some, because otherwise you couldn't survive. You know, you have to accept certain things and then live with it. You know, after the war, I hated everything and everybody around me. And I've been criticized for saying what I said, because I wanted to wipe Germany off the map. Excuse for me saying that. I hate it. But then you realize that if you continue to hate, you're destroying yourself, because the people you hate couldn't care less, don't even know you. So you learn how to make peace with yourself. And that's how you survive. If you don't do that, you don't make it.
Shoshana, I want to bring you back in here for both of you. With the work that you do at the Illinois Holocaust Museum, and the story that you tell, Aaron, the story of your life. When a child comes in and maybe tours with a third grade class, fourth grade class, and you tell these stories, what's their reaction? Are they able to comprehend the Holocaust, Holocaust survivors, and what happened that's right in front of them?
I've learned to respect young people much more than I ever did. 13, 14-year-olds are so worldly. They understand. They put themselves sometimes in your place and trying to think, could they have done that? And they come up to you and they hug you and they talk to you and they send you letters. And I feel a certain accomplishment that I'm contributing something. I don't know if I'm right or wrong or not, that I can mix it up with these young people, that I can reach them. I'm very fortunate. We every month get a contingent of police recruits that I'm fortunate to speak to. And I love these guys, you know. But it's different when you speak to adults and when you speak to young people. Your language changes. Because I can say certain things to a policeman that I wouldn't dare say to a youngster.
Full circle here, Shoshana. At the beginning, we talked about preserving these stories. As we hear Aaron's story tonight, you think about how you're going to interact as a museum when people like Aaron are no longer with us, and that generation of kids are new, with a new third grade class that comes through, and they're now engaging with a hologram or they're engaging with the written word, mm-hmm. but they don't have that experience to be in the same room with someone who went through such atrocities. How at the museum are you thinking about that? Think about that next level, the next generation.
So there's nothing that is as effective as speaking to someone like Aaron in person. But I think the next best thing is what we have in these interactive holograms, because they are very real and very engaging. And the fact that you can feel like you're having a conversation is really quite incredible and really makes you have that empathy. And what we want is to tell the story of the Holocaust so that it isn't just a footnote, mm-hmm. but not only that, we want our visitors to leave inspired to stand up and speak out when they see something wrong, because they hear about stories where where people didn't, and where good people didn't do things, and where good, some good people did, and the difference that it made in lives like Aaron's. And so we, that is the goal of us telling these stories, that our visitors will walk away with the desire to do something.
My last question for you, Aaron, is as you think about your life, as you've been telling stories and new generation of kids are learning about the Holocaust, do you worry as you get older in life that when the generation is gone, that the public consciousness will go with it?
That was and is my concern, not just mine, but a lot of Holocaust survivors. When we're gone, will it be two sentences in the history books during World War II, they killed Jews? That's it? And that's why I feel so humbled. I feel so passionate about what we did. Because if you have a chance to look at it, we sit there in three dimensions. We're out there with the students. And they're able to ask any question at all. And there's very little that we will not be able to answer because we answered 2,000 questions.
My guest tonight on the show, Aaron Elster. Aaron, a Holocaust survivor, and Shoshana Buchholz-Miller is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. Aaron and 12 others, their stories are featured in a new hologram center. Take a Stand Center is the best way to say that. But your stories and 12 others are in. You can go in and interact and ask questions of Holocaust survivors at the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie. I can't thank you both enough for coming in and sharing your story, Aaron, and Shoshana, talking about the exhibit or the new center. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's great being with you. I thank you for listening.
It's Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. That was great. You can go to Illinois Holocaust Museum and be able to talk to Aaron, interact with him, his hologram. That's what that's all about, the hologram. I'm going to go up. I'm going to take my son. He's 10 years old, and it breaks my heart. And it's obviously extremely emotional to think about Aaron at 10 years old having to go through that. It really is unfathomable that would be something. I mean, I think about being 10 years old and riding bikes and doing 10-year-old things. And my son is 10 years old right now. It'd be really hard. And Ella on Twitter had a correction for me, and I think that it's worth saying, although I don't mean any. She says it can be insensitive, but to call it a Polish concentration camp, it was a German concentration camp located in Poland, because it gives a connotation. I think everyone knows that. You know, I don't think that it's, you know, that I'm confusing it, but the idea being that it was a Nazi German concentration camp, labor camp, located in Poland. It wasn't the Polish government doing that. Powerful story. And you can, I think there are 13 different holograms on display, so not just Aaron's story, but 12 others. And he wrote a memoir. And he's had a lot of, he's on a speaking tour. So Aaron goes around to different school groups, as he mentioned in the interview, and talks to different people about his experience. And there's something to be said about that. That is very, very impactful to do that. But as a generation of people move on, pass on, it's going to be more difficult to tell those stories. So I applaud the Illinois Holocaust Museum and the U.S. Holocaust Museum as well, to finding new ways and technology to preserve those stories so we don't forget. So we're not in a position where human beings do that to human beings again and we just sit by idly and watch because we have no history to remind us of the horror. Aaron's story. Great hour. All right, coming up, 9 o'clock, we're going to talk about Illinois children. This is an interesting... as we kind of move from one to another, I mean, this is kind of interesting. The Voices for Illinois Children just put out their 2017 Illinois Kids Count data book. And it looks at this issue that has become a hotbed. I mean, this is really the issue that everyone's talking about, this education equality. We just had all of that going around Springfield in the last 3 months about making sure the funding formula was fair to everybody. But they look at education equality, and they look how it varies. The data shows how it varies from county to county. It could be the same income level, everything, but county to county, different regions of the state of Illinois have more opportunity. Now, that's an obvious thing. But to think that you could live and have the same, essentially the same life, and live in one area and live in another and have vastly different outcomes, there's something to look at there. So we'll talk with Tasha Green-Cruzat, who's in studio tonight. She's the president of Voices for Illinois Children. Also, just about the fact that we now live in a perpetual state of budget chaos. That's coming up here on the download. Also, Paul Kelly will be performing live in studio, the Australian singer-songwriter. Lots to do. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It is a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Paul Kelly's going to join us after 9:30, the Australian legend. He's a singer-songwriter, kind of a modern rock feel, who's won every single award and has charted at the top of the Australian charts for years. And he's had many crossovers here to America, nothing like he has in Australia. But he will be in studio. We'll talk with him about his illustrious career, 30-plus years, and also he's going to play live. So that's coming up a little bit later in the hour. Well, everywhere you look these days, at every level of government, we're constantly in a state of budget chaos, whether it's fixed by raising taxes or stymied by ideology and political infighting, or even being created by the repeal of other taxes. It's just becoming a fact of life that our municipalities don't have the money to run government the way it has been run in the past. And that begs the question, who gets hurt the most? People who have to pay more, or maybe people who get less in return? Or as called out by Voices for Illinois Children, kids. Whether it's education or tax reforms, immigration, healthcare, or poverty programs, they're all under examination, and some say attack. Voices for Illinois Children is a not-for-profit that seeks to champion strong public policies that help advance equity for Illinois children. They just put out their 2017 Illinois Kids Count data book, which looks at education equality and how it varies from county to county. In studio with me tonight, the president of Voices for Illinois Children, Tasha Green-Cruzat. Tasha, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
All right, so let's talk about this. The data book, before we even get into that, I mean, would you agree with my assessment that we live in a perpetual state of budget chaos? Like that's essentially at every level of government now, it just seems like this has become a 24/7 news cycle?
Yes, I completely agree. And, you know, we are still feeling the effects of the two-year budget stalemate. So a lot of these human service providers, you know, they shut their doors, they reduced staff, they reduced, you know, the services to some of the most vulnerable people in our state.
Right, open up lines of credit.
Absolutely. And so we're still trying to recover from that. And so we're still not out of, you know, this fog of mess, right?
Right.
And the ones that get hurt are the most are our children, our families that take care of these children, and we can't just keep cutting human services, right? You know, we have to find ways, you know, how do we have a balanced budget? You know, how do we responsibly raise taxes? You know, we still have this flat tax. You know, that's also a big part of the problem,
right? We're talking about the progressive tax income tax for years now, right?
Absolutely. So we can't keep, you know, balancing the budget on the backs of our citizens, especially our children. And so we've got to do more to fix
that. Now, I just read the Better Government Association's report just last week, I think it was. It said that the governor's office is withholding some of those social service monies that came out of the budget that finally got signed this past year. I mean, so a lot of people think because the politics kind of got figured out that the two parties somewhat came together and they voted on a budget that we are past that and we are moving on and sunshine and blue skies are ahead. But in reality, you know, to the governor's office, it's unbalanced. They're withholding some money from social service agencies. Mm-hmm. There's such a backlog because of what happened in a 2 years' time.
Right.
This is a very difficult time for some of the more vulnerable in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, you know, they popped the champagne bottles way too early. You know, we still have the $16 billion backlog that we have to take care of, even though, you know, we have some of the money to sort of, you know, pay some of these bills down, but it's going to take a very long time. The governor just cut $89 million in human services. You know, so we are not out of the clear yet, right? We still have more to do. You know, progress I felt that was made is the $350 million that was set aside, you know, for the school formula, right? And I think that that's great. But the problem is that we have that allocated for this fiscal year. Well, what about the 10 years that we have to make good on that $350 million, right? So we have to find, you know, how we're going to get that money next fiscal year and the year after that. And we cannot let our kids down. We have to make sure we have to hold, you know, our leaders to make good on that promise.
It's amazing to me because when you hear any politician, any lawmaker that runs for office, mm-hmm. they will run on the idea that they are going to provide for Illinois children. Whether Republican or Democrat, whatever, you know, how they run. I think about it, even with the governor's race that's mm-hmm. coming up, the leaders in the Democratic primary talk about their record when they talk about early education opportunities. Mm-hmm. So how is it that when we actually get the rubber meets the road, that more services are taken away from mm-hmm. helping families and helping kids, and there is this inequality gap that continues to happen mm-hmm. in our schools in the state of Illinois? Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because they are not keeping children at the center of their policy making. They're not making them a priority. So, you know, they can talk about, you know, and have their plea of what they're going to do for kids and families. But mm-hmm. when it's time to really develop that policy, they need to have children, especially the most vulnerable, at the center of their brains, right? They have to have them in mind when they're thinking about this policy, and they got to hold true to that. And I don't think that's been happening, right? I think that's been slipping, and they've got to make some changes. You know, too many of our kids are suffering. The inequalities in education continues, and that is something that has to be dealt with.
Well, you pointed out in the Illinois Kids Count data book, the 2017 one put out by the Voices for Illinois Children, about how equality in education opportunities mm-hmm. varies from county to county. And when I read that, and it's kind of a no-brainer, mm-hmm. where I say, okay, yeah, you're absolutely right. If you live in Lake County or mm-hmm. some of the outlying counties, DuPage County, you're probably going to have a better education because there's more income being put in than, say, Cook County. But it's more than that. I mean, they're in some places in Cook County, they are getting the same amount of money. We just saw with this formula the idea that everyone's going to get mm-hmm. appropriate or the proportionate amount of money to for what their needs are. But why is it when the money is the same or proportionate that the outcomes are varied?
Yeah, there's got to be a systemic change. You know, when you think about teacher quality, right? You know, there are some school districts that get less quality teachers or teachers that are teaching maybe in their first and second year. They're not getting these more seasoned teachers. And you're seeing a lot of that in a lot of these districts that have, you know, high poverty children.
Well, CPS and does that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're saying, yeah, like the idea of that you can pay for and you can withhold or you can hold on to an experienced teacher, and that mm-hmm. shows up the difference in the data.
Absolutely. And then also with principals, you know, sometimes, you know, what you will see, especially where you see a high number of African-American or Latino students, they're not getting the principals that are also more seasoned. They're getting, you know, interim principals and principals that are probably first year, second year principals. And so it's about making sure that quality is distributed fairly,
right?
You know, and that they take a look at those schools that are in most need to make sure that they're doing a holistic assessment of what that school needs. And I think if they share those schools that are successful in some of these districts, you know, those that are not need to collaborate and share some best practices and say, hey, here's what we're doing over here. And they have to, you know, be able to set their pride aside, right? And say, hey, you know, I'm going to go talk to this district because they are excelling. No matter what color, you know, black, white, Latino, their kids, you know, are faring well.
Is that not happening? Is that, I mean, if there's a great school that's faring well and competing at a national level in the western suburbs, are other schools in the state of Illinois not reaching out to find out how?
I would really hope that they are, and I think that that is part of the solution. I don't think it's the entire solution, but I think, you know, it's very well worth it to say, hey, what are some of your strategies? You know, how are you dealing with some of the students that come to you that may not be up to standard in their schoolwork? You know, if you even look at The English language arts, you know, for third grade, there are some students there are some districts, right, where you see the kids are meeting. But those are you're going to see a high number of those kids meeting where there are non-low income students. So if you look at the statistics, 22% of third graders in English language arts, they met expectations. So 51%, right, you're seeing non-low income. So that's a gap. That's a that's a pretty wide.
That's what you're looking
gap,
for when
right?
you look at the data. Is where's the achievement gap and right. what and trying to figure out and I don't know how you do it. Why that's the case? I mean, because in a lot of cases it's not about funding. It's about something else. And I just wonder in society, and it's not just here in the state of Illinois, but all over, and we've had different people come in here and talk, but about trying to get at the root causes of this, of why one area that has the same factors that is just in a different region, 100 miles apart from each other, is doing well where the other one's not. And I don't know what it is, and how do you end up studying that?
Yeah, you know, and that's why the work that we do is so very important, and that's why it's important to really look at the data, because the data tells a story, right? And so if you can look at that, analyze it, and try to bring some strategies around that. And so that's why it's important for us to put this report out. You know, it helps other organizations, other child advocacy organizations, other human services organizations, those that are in care of children, to be able to see some of these disparities and try to mitigate them.
Yeah, or be the one who can create the bridge.
Right.
Tasha Green Cruzat's in studio. She's the president of Voices for Illinois Children. You know, before I let you go, I'm interested because as I mentioned in the lead, you know, one of the things you do is try to champion strong public policies. And I would, as an advocacy group, that means you have to be able to talk to legislators and people in the county and other places. How do you do that? I mean, when's the right time for you as an advocacy group to get into the conversation when you're talking about income inequality, disparities with kids, schools, education, that kind of stuff? Is it important for you guys to insert yourself early on to say that we are an advocate for Illinois children?
Yes.
And do they accept that?
Right. No, you have to constantly put that in front of them, right? Especially now that you see that there are some seats changing in Springfield and you're going to see some new faces. It's important to keep them educated and to keep them very well informed so that when they make these decisions, they're thinking of children and their needs and what they need to live happy, healthy, and safe lives in Illinois. And so we don't let up. We keep going. And it's important for us not to let that conversation fall by the wayside and to keep that front and center.
Does it help you, your personal, your professional career? You were once chief of staff to President Preckwinkel. Mm-hmm. Does that history, to that experience, does it help you when you have to go down to Springfield or go to the county to advocate and make sure that these lawmakers are educated?
I mean, you know, it can help in that, you know, they see a familiar face, they trust your work. They know that you are a stand-up person. And so that does help. So, you know, being able to say, hey, what kind of work and successes that we have seen under Tasha's leadership. I think that does help a lot, you
know?
But I can't rest on those laurels. I can't depend on
that.
Well,
data speaks for itself.
The data speaks for itself, right?
Well, my last question is just really about, you know, the process. Do you have to constantly be paying attention to the different bodies of government? If we're living in a new world of budget chaos and it's perpetual, mm-hmm. do you always have to be paying attention? We just saw this week at the Cook County Budget, the commissioner's talking about cutting back on hospitals, or even before that, every department gets a 10% cut. Please bring your ideas forward. Or in Springfield, the idea that the governor is trying to balance an unbalanced budget by withholding funds that were already allocated. Are you constantly having to monitor municipalities even after you get things passed, or that we all think we know exactly what's going to happen?
We do, you know, and in fact, you know, work that we've been trying to pay attention lately is what's happening at the federal level, because what happens there affects the states, right? And what affects the states affect the local municipality. So it's important to keep an eye. And even if you've made progress, it's important to make sure that we are not walking back that progress, right? So we do have to continue to fight and stay in front of it to keep it in place.
Tasha Green Cruzat is the president of the Voices for Illinois Children. They just put out their 2017 Illinois Kids Count data book. Tasha, thanks for joining us, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Justin.
Morning, right along here on the download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Paul Kelly coming up here after 9:30. And at 10 o'clock, it's the swap meet. Greg Flam back in the building, 312-981-7200. I tell you this now because inevitably you're going to get to like 10:45 and go, oh, you know what? I wanted to get up into my attic and see if I still have those dolls, right? And then you scurry up there, and dust goes everywhere. You got to put a little mask on. You're digging through some old stuff. You're like Chevy Chase from Christmas Vacation, kind of going in, trying to. And then you get down, you find it, you text in, you call in, and the show's over. So I'm telling you now, let you know ahead of time. I'm racking your brain. Perhaps it's a ticket stub, or perhaps it's a signed piece of memorabilia from sports or from pop culture. Perhaps it's a toy that you held on to. Or perhaps, my favorite, it's some piece, artifact, memorabilia from a different day, from a bygone era. I remember when we started this, the first thing we did with the swap meet, the first one we did years ago now, year plus ago, was the Jane Byrne coloring book, which was a classic. And then everyone kept calling in for the first couple of weeks. They kept calling in with, well, I've got one of those posters from when the Pope got here. Also, by the way, Grisanich, I was listening to this morning. I wanted to do a carryout item. I totally forgot. I had the joke in my head this morning at 8:30. The Pope said that he doesn't like doing the mass in public anymore in the square because everybody's got their phones or they're pointing their phones up. He said, instead of pointing your phones up, maybe look inside and, you know, look to God. I forget something like that. And I was like, can't they do both? I thought you were cool, Pope. What happened? Well, you get a couple years under your belt and you become old Pope again? What happened to cool Pope? I thought cool Pope would be like, here, let me give you a Pope filter.
Stop making the Vatican so cool.
Yeah, right?
Wear a regular outfit.
I don't understand. I thought you were cool, Pope. I guess not. But if it's anything like, if that mass is anything like Disney's World of Color, yeah, it's out of control. Put your phone down. Oh, my God. Everybody. When I was there a couple years back for the Disney World of Color at the Disneyland, everybody puts their arm out and they tape the entire thing on their iPads or their iPhone. 40 minutes.
Yeah, I always wonder when
what are you doing with that?
Yeah, like I wonder what people do with that kind of stuff.
Right?
Do they put it on YouTube?
Do you put it on YouTube?
Because like, you know, you're at a concert and somebody's like taping the whole concert. It's
what
horrible.
Are you doing with
like,
it?
Yeah, like
Are you subjecting people on Thanksgiving? You're like, I know everyone needs to get home, but I want to show you my handheld I did of the Counting Crows. Yeah, you're going to love it.
You know, you don't hear anything.
I mean, I get the concept.
Take it a little bit, you know, for memories and whatnot.
I get it for memories, and I get it if it's like a personal thing. Maybe it's your kid or something up on stage.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. What are we doing here? We're taping everything.
Why do I have a 45-minute video of Adam Duritz?
Taking it all back. Pope was right. New Pope was right. Knock it off. I'll translate for you. Knock it off. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest tonight just played at Space in Evanston. One of the best singer-songwriters Australia's ever known. Giving up for live in studio, Mr. Paul Kelly.
The morning bright and still has laid a frost across the hill. And the glory of it takes my breath away. The bird song in the trees, floating on the ghost of a breeze, says you're lucky to be a creature alive today. The rosy-fingered dawn is changing color in the east, like in ancient days we'll never see again. Once we were together, that I do remember. All the rest is like a letter in the rain. So I go to check my snares, see what night caught unawares. Take the path along the creek again. In the garden of delight, a snake slithered into sight. So we left Eden and headed for the plain. Day by day and night by night, she didn't leave my side. Now she never wants to see my face again. Once we spoke in love's low tongue, as all the bells at midnight rung. All the rest is like a letter in the rain. There's a river somewhere up around the bend. When it hurts, that river's always been my friend. Frost is gone now from the hill, like a vision in a dream. You never know when glory will come again. I remember her dark stare and a braid of nut brown hair. All the rest is just a letter in the rain.
Paul Kelly's a legend in Australia. The rock singer-songwriter has a 30-plus year career in the music business, had success here in the States as well. Kelly just put out his 21st studio album called Life is Fine. He's a Hall of Famer who's done so much in so many genres. It's hard to put him in a category, but he's in studio tonight. Paul Kelly, welcome to The Download. Great to see you.
Great to be here.
Great performance, too.
Thank you. Great to be in the great city of Chicago.
So how often do you get to Chicago? You've had such a tremendous career, but most of it in Australia. How often do you get to town?
I was here last May doing one show with Charlie Owen, a guitar player that I've worked with, and my daughters were singing. That was for a record we put out last year called Death Stateless Night. But generally we try to get here to the States in general every couple of years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes the gaps are longer, sometimes shorter, but try to keep coming back.
How important is it for you to tour the States?
I love it. I love coming here. I don't want to just play in Australia and... you know, I think I'll wear out my welcome at home if I play there too much. So it's good to
doubtful,
go,
doubtful,
go,
but.
go everywhere else as well.
It is amazing to just read up on you and to look at your career. You really are considered one of the best singer-songwriters to come out of Australia. They're doing tribute concerts for you. You got a lot going on there. You've had success and you've had a respectable career here in the States. Mm-hmm. But is it different when you come to the States and you got to carry your own guitar and you got to, I mean, audiences come out, but is it a different kind of experience?
Oh, yeah, it is different. We play smaller venues for a start. So we're usually playing to 200 or 300 people, whereas it's home it's bigger audiences. But I like that too. I like playing anywhere. I like small venues are just as much fun as bigger venues, sometimes more fun.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the whites of their eyes. I like that.
Do you have to change your set when you think about the venue you're going to play in? Is there some stuff you can do that's smaller because or more intimate because you know it's going to be a smaller space?
That's an interesting question. The set does change depending on the kind of venue it is. In a small bar that where maybe, if it's a, you know, some bars are kind of rowdy, and so you play something that's probably a bit more rocking. On this tour, I've got my whole band with me, so we can sort of change gears pretty easily. So if it's a noisy bar, we can just pull out the stops.
Right.
But we can play really quiet songs as well. And some of the rooms we play, you know, set up as real listening rooms, so you can mix it up and play quietly. And, you know, when it's... You know, playing outdoors is different to playing in a theater, is different to playing in a bar. So you'd sort of tailor the music accordingly.
Paul Kelly, singer-songwriter from Australia, in studio. His new album's called Life is Fine. He just played at Space in Evanston. We'll do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More with Paul Kelly in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in the studio tonight, the singer-songwriter Paul Kelly, in the Australian Recording Hall of Fame. You have 21 studio albums, including the last one, Life is Fine. You are a legend in Australia and of course, had a great career here in the States as well. You know, when you talk about this new music, because you have had a career in which you've been able to expand beyond genre. You know, you started, you know, more, I guess, like rock, R&B, and we talked about pubs. I want to ask about mm-hmm. that as well. But, and you've done so much in your career. This album, and a lot of people are talking about it, it's almost a throwback to some of your earlier work. Do you hear that?
Yeah. I've made a few records over the last few years that have been down various tracks. I did a record last year of Shakespeare sonnets put to music, and then... Also last year, the record I mentioned before with Charlie Owen, which was songs we've performed at funerals, which isn't as morbid as it sounds, but it is basically just a frame for a covers record. Before that, I'd done a record with called The Merry Soul Sessions, which had six different singers, including me on it. Before that, it was a song cycle, more pastoral, sort of folky type record. So I've been building to this record for a while. I wanted to, especially after the two more philosophical, meditative records last year.
You just wanted a rock record, right?
Oh, yeah, upbeat, playful. The songs are playful. It's upbeat. And, some of the tunes hark back to some of the records I made in the 80s. No real plan to that. It's just the way it turned out. But, it's a fun record to play and it was a fun record to make.
When you have a career in music where you've written so many different songs of so many different types... People will talk about, like I said, your R&B roots or your rock roots, or like you just said, some of the theme records you've done. When you play them in a set, like if you're at Space in Evanston, you play something back from Gossip or other places, does it bring you back to that moment, the moment in which you were a lot younger or a moment in which you were in a different place musically? What does it do to you when you play a song from something, say, from the mid-80s?
Well, some of those songs I've been carrying around for a long time, and some of them I play quite regularly, and so after a while I sort of forget where the song, I even forget what record they came from. They just become the like tools in the toolkit, I suppose, and they sort of detach themselves almost from a time and the record, and they just become songs I can draw on. You know, with this tour we play the new record first as a piece, and then we move on to a mix of old songs, and we keep changing that each night.
So. When you have a canon like you do, so many different songs and so many different styles, are there any times where you're like, let's go get that deep track from 1982 and bring it out and play it on this tour, play it in this show? Do you ever go back to some of the stuff that you don't regularly play on tour and try it out?
Yeah, that happens all the time. And often it's prompted by audiences. So someone, you know, one night someone will call out a tune and I think, right, that one. But obviously I can't play it on the spot because I still have to go and do my homework on that one. So that's, people often help me remember tunes or just remind me of them and then I go back and dig them out, yeah.
You've been someone, as you mentioned, you know, with the last two records before this one, who will go into philosophy or other plays. You talked about the written word and Shakespeare and some other things in the sonnets. As a singer-songwriter, how important is it to honor the word, to the written word? Because you do so much, and the music that you perform is so story. It's, I don't want to say storytelling, but it's so singer-songwriter focused. It's about either you or who your character that you're singing for. How important is it to you personally, Paul Kelly, the written word?
I love words. I love the written word. I love poetry. You know, I love Shakespeare. He's my favorite writer, but he wrote his plays to be performed. So though I think words are important, I don't think they're more important than music, because if the music's dull or boring, people won't listen to the words. So in my case, generally, music's always been coming first, or it comes with the words. But I do write songs often from a point of view of characters.
Yeah.
And I am storytelling sometimes. Probably the best way to describe it is I'm a visual songwriter. I've been influenced by visual songwriters like Chuck Berry. You can see his songs. And Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, you can see their songs. You know, they mapped out, you know, Chuck Berry mapped mm-hmm. America. Lou Reed mapped a little part of Manhattan. Ray Davies from the Kinks, you know, people swarming like flies around Waterloo Underground. You know, you can see those songs. So
for you as a writer, does the music come first? Does the hook come first and then the words fill in, or is it the other way around?
Most of my writing life, it's been music first. There's usually always sounds attached or some words. So there's sounds. I don't really, you know, sing pure melody. I sing something that's got a sound and certain vowels, but it's sort of kind of gibberish, really. And then I just try and get words that fit those sounds. But it's only in the last 5 or 6 years that I've started to put poetry to music, some of other people's words, which in a way has sort of helped me write a different way, because mm-hmm. I never thought you could start with the words, but I've started putting poems to music, which included the Shakespeare record. And now sometimes I might write a little poem and then just put it to music. So it has changed the way I write, but only in the last 5 years. But it's kind of good to be writing for 30, 35, 40 years and find a new way to do it. So I'm quite grateful for that.
I mentioned right at the top about the pub, because early on in your career, that's really one of the ways you got started was playing in the pubs. Talk about how your career has evolved to where you're at now. You listen to your music, I'm like, this is not the kind of music that I'm necessarily going to hear in what I think to be pub music. But is it? Is it all an evolution from one place to where you're at now?
There's an evolution, I guess, but there's also circles. You know, like some of the songs on this record sound like you mentioned before, they sound like records I made in the 80s. So like every writer, there's probably I have a certain blueprint, you know. Sometimes I write a song and it feels like, oh, yeah, that's one I could have written 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
But that's why I'm interested in trying to break those habits or collaborate to find new ways to write. But I'm still going to write, you know. I don't think I've changed that much since I started writing. There's still a lot of the early influences are still there, and I still, you know, the themes are probably still the same: sex, death, memory, friends, love. What else is there?
What else is there? Paul Kelly, Australian singer-songwriter, in studio with us tonight. He's going to play one more song for us. Before you do that, what's next for you? This is a more traditional type of record, the record you just put out. Do you find yourself maybe gravitating more to theme-type records in the future, or are you going to stick with this and go straight ahead?
I'm always sort of, even records that aren't so, you know, so tightly themed, I'm a big fan of the album, so I love to make records that are coherent or where the songs talk to each other in some way. So, and I think it's actually more important to do that these days, because if you're going to put out an album, you have to have a reason to do it, because people are going to listen to music in little,
yeah,
you know,
right,
a song here and a song there, which is great. So I think it makes it more of a challenge to make records that demand to be heard as a piece.
Paul Kelly, the Australian singer-songwriter with his 21st studio album, Life is Fine. He is in studio with his background singers, Linda and Vicka Bull, and they are on this track that we're going to hear live, Josefina.
This is the story of Josefina and the ne'er-do-well who loves her.
Won't you come out and play, Josephine? I missed you all yesterday, Josephine. Tell your boss you need the afternoon off to go and visit a sick friend. You know it wouldn't be a lie, not at all untrue, 'cause I'm down with a fever for you. I love the sweet hip shake thing, Josephine. The out-of-tune way you sing, Josephine. I love the light and dark inside your eyes and the ways of your laughter. I love your sudden clutch of sizzle, baby, put on a brave just before your body starts to shake. To the market I'll go, Josephine. Buy some fresh fish for us both, Josephine. I'm gonna cook you up a red hot meal. We'll eat it on the veranda. And later on we'll play some old sweet and ragged tunes and dance under the light of the moon. I'll get a job really soon, Josephine. I know that's what you want me to do, Josephine. I save my money and I'll buy an old car. Head on up to the islands. I hear they're taking lots of people on all summer long. And when it's over, we'll keep moving along. Won't you come over here, Josephine? This old world is good when you're near, Josephine. I know some people say you should beware. I'm a ne'er-do-well time waster. But I know your mother likes me and I like her too. Oh, she's a spitting image of you. Won't you come out and play, Josephine? I miss you, oh, yesterday, Josephine. I love the way that you sway, Josephine.
Paul Kelly, legend in Australia, singer-songwriter. His latest album, Life is Fine, that was the track Josephine with Linda and Vicka Bull, both on background. I can't thank you enough, Paul, for coming in studio. I know time is tight, and we appreciate you coming in and speaking to us tonight.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having me, Justin.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. That's how you have to say it.
That was good.
Yeah.
I like that.
You have to go play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Otherwise, it doesn't recognize it.
One of these days when we're really bored,
you're messing.
We need to turn the studio speakers around up here in the newsroom.
See if it works.
Because the Alexa is right over there in the corner. And I'll let you say it loud enough to activate.
You got to do it off mic. Play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Right. It's good stuff. Turn lights on. Turn other lights on.
Activate microwave.
Defrost mode.
Flush toilet, please.
I wonder if I could hook up my crock pot. Like if I could do like a slow cooker.
Oh yeah, you're on the slow cooker.
Yeah, what if I did that? Yeah. Like it's like selection low, 6 to 8 hours.
Warm, please.
Warm, please. Put chop up onion.
Yeah, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
All right, yeah, but I think we're on to something. We can get that, like Alexa just has little arms. And cut up the carrots, peel the carrots. We're on to something.
It's like dancing around on your table when you get home. Like exactly. A dog, it's all excited to
exactly.
See you.
Exactly. It's perfect. And you know what? We'll find out what that would be worth with Greg Flamm coming up in the swap meet. Yeah. What would a live, breathing, chopping Alexa be worth?
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure.
when you were a kid and your fingers in your nose. Today, you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here we are.
Here we go. It's time for the Swap Meet here. It's Wednesday night, 312-981-7200, our regular weekly segment where we evaluate all your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. That's right.
Yep.
See if it's worth anything. Or if you got something you just want to brag about. I gave everybody a heads up about an hour ago, Greg.
I heard that.
I just said, hey, now's your chance to get the old ladder out.
Right.
Get up to that crawl space or go down to the crawl space, up to the attic. Make it all happen. Let's get some good stuff tonight.
Right. And I try to bring stuff in that will make people run to their attic or their garage and find it.
You have already piqued the interest of Mr. Rob Martyr with what you brought in today. Why don't you kick us off, Greg, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. He can evaluate. He can tell you what your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk is worth. He's here all hour. What do you got tonight? What'd you bring in?
Well, the big item I brought in was mint condition Nintendo NES, the first one, NES Dash.
Now you're not pulling the wool over here and like going to Target last week and getting one that's like the classic.
Right,
redone.
The classic. Yeah, it's much the new classic is much smaller than this one. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this one's works great. Everything's great about it. But yeah, it's the first one.
What games come with this? This is the first one. This is the classic box. It comes with the little gun.
Yeah, zapper and two controllers, and it's got Duck Hunt and Mario Brothers on one cartridge.
Well, I say that we make the rest of the hour just a almost like a DVD. What do you call those tracks that people the DVD director's cut where you can to play along?
Oh yeah, yeah, commentary.
And, yeah, commentary, and we just play this. We get this hooked up, and we go right
we'll
to a TV.
We'll get a TV going,
and all you hear is us going, "No, hit the." And you got to trying to get the actual cartridges to work. Right. I love this. Nintendo said everybody in our neighborhood went crazy for this because this would have been right when I was, 13, 14, 15 years old. But the this Contra, doesn't come with Contra? It's a classic?
It doesn't come with it, but yeah, it will work with
an
that.
AB, up, down, 1-2, 1-2, nobody?
Yeah, my game was Mike Tyson, Punch-Out.
Oh,
and
classic.
Obviously Mario Brothers and... trying to think of some of the other. Obviously, Tetris was a big one.
Tetris, that's right. I always get these confused because I remember quickly thereafter Sega Genesis came on board.
Yep.
And they had the NHL game. They had Madden, which I still play today.
Yeah.
And not very well, but I always, whenever I see the numbers of Mitch Trubisky and everyone's mad, I'm like, well, that's what I do. And throw the ball 8 times and run it 40 times. Okay, so this is, how much does something like that go for? Like if you get the original set here,
I mean, it should go for $160 to $230,
really?
Yeah.
How much were these going for in the 80s? Like what were they going for?
I thought they were like $100. Yeah, I thought they were.
Cuz now you want to get a video system like the Nintendo Switch where they went $300, $400.
Yeah, and they're sold out, so then you're buying online and paying extra.
That's cuz they made 30 of them.
Right,
They're like, "We are sold out. We are so popular."
Yeah, they do that on purpose to get the hype machine going on that.
Right. All right, what else you got here?
Then I just brought, some old car parts. These are like from 1951,
cool.
And they're all Mopar, but I brought these because some people just collect them for the box, and these actually have the parts in them that
classic
you could use with,
look, yeah.
So, it's kind of one of those things that, people might have in their garage or basement and think, oh, I'm just going to throw this out, and... Mm-hmm. These are $20, $30 a piece.
That's an accelerator pedal?
Yeah, there's
the
accelerator
pedal.
This is the actual pedal, yeah.
Have you broken your accelerator pedal lately?
Right. It's for
Plymouth, Mopar.
Dodge, and DeSoto, 1949 to 1953.
Wow.
This will work, yeah.
Wow, those are cool.
And then there's a couple other parts, yeah. So I just thought people might find those in the
garage.
Good
stuff. All right, let's kick it off. You guys ready? You ready to kick it off?
Yeah, let's do it.
Got people on the line already. Let's go to Denise. Denise, what do you want to brag about, Denise?
Hey, actually, I don't want to brag. I'm wondering. I have some 1977 original Star Wars in the package.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, Kenner, yeah,
huge.
So what I want to know is, I've heard people say, "Oh, you should get those judged or something, or not judged, but
graded." Yeah.
Graded.
Right.
That's the word. Okay. So really, do you think that's really worth it?
If they're in the package, never been opened, yeah. you might right. want to consider if they're 77, they're Kenner brand, you might want right. to consider that on certain characters.
Which characters do you have?
Yeah.
Quite a few.
Okay. Do you have Star Wars? So you're going to have Luke. You're going to yeah. have Darth Vader. Obi-Wan's yeah. probably in that mix. R2-D2, C-3PO. What about right. Lando? You got a Lando? A Lando Calrissian?
I think Calrissian. Yeah, I yeah. think that we do have Lando.
Yeah.
But right. so you would,
what about a Neum Num from Return of the Jedi? Like a Neum Num. That's where you... I mean, I'm just trying to help.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help.
Well, so do you think I should have those graded then?
You
seriously?
Know, I don't think... In this case, I don't think you have to have them graded to really get some good money for yeah. them. You know, I mean, okay. If it was a baseball card type thing, yeah, I would say yes. But okay. with Star Wars, that era sells really well, really fast. And I would just do some research and yeah. just... let it fly.
So, like, are there stores? My next question is, are there any, like, stores in Chicago that you could take, like, brick and mortar, as opposed to eBay or something like that?
Well, I'll tell you right now, if you take them to a store, you're yeah. not going to get top dollar for them. You know, you're going to get, like, 30-40% of the value because they have to resell it. So you have to keep okay. that in mind. I would just try to, you know, sell it online yourself, or if you have a family member who's, you know, good at doing the online sales yeah. stuff,
like
have okay. them do it, yeah, well, and just give them a little cut on the side there.
Sure. Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate
All
it.
Right.
Very
Thanks,
nice.
Denise. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks
Bye.
For calling.
I wonder if Denise has a Bib Fortuna. It's classic. That
right.
was Jabba's
yeah.
interpreter. Just saying. Everyone's
right.
got a Luke.
Right.
But do you have Luke who's in the snow? Do you have Snow Luke?
Right.
It's a different Luke.
Or the Carbonite, was it?
Right.
Han
you
Solo.
Got... you could have regular Han Solo or
right.
Carbonite.
Right.
There's a lot of different. Yeah, let's explore that throughout the hour. 312-981-7200. We're doing the swap meet. Greg Flamm is here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we have more to get to on the swap meet. Stay with us. It's a swap meet here on WGN Radio. Greg Flamm at Two-Page Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, in studio. 312-981-7200. The calls are coming in. The texts are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to them. All right, you ready?
Yes.
All right. We got a picture here from 630. A 1961 Grundig Majestic. Immaculate condition wood, except for grandma slightly chipped wood on the underside from vacuuming. Grandma. Yeah. AM, FM, shortwave, all receive stations well, and record player works. It's like a record hutch, big
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, it's a big,
yeah, and
big
it says
piece of
that,
furniture.
It's a Model SO150UA1.
Yeah, I couldn't get, because they are becoming more rare, so I couldn't get that model price, but a similar model, the 190 model, someone's asking $600 for it, and I've seen a couple sell for $350. I'm thinking that model could be upwards of $600 to $700.
Yeah, come on, man. You know. Just yuppie boutique
but it
furniture
works.
Places alone are going to ask for that.
Right.
And even they don't even care if you open it up. Yeah. It's a, wow, how great. Oh, there's a record player too?
Yeah, a boutique might actually ask for more. You know,
yeah.
These are kind of online prices where you can get them a little less. But yeah, but the thing with that is it's just so big that you narrow your...
Yeah,
you know, mark it down a little bit.
Right.
They have the tabletop ones that you know you can ship easily and everything. So, I've sold a few of those for you know $100, $150. I'll pick them up for $10 at a garage sale. So, and what's great about Grundig is they work. I mean, you hardly have to do anything to them; just kind of dust them off, and you know, they'll work. You know, they've made them to last.
All right, let's go to Jim's along the same lines. Jim, what do you want to brag about, Jim? What do you got?
Yeah, I got a entertainment center. Short story quick. My sister was at Elvis Presley's house in Memphis there, and they went through a walkthrough, and she goes, "You're not going to believe it. We've got the same entertainment center as Elvis Presley does, identical." She looked at it and everything.
Okay.
It's RCA 8-track 45 CD player with it's got color lights that flash.
Wow.
With the beat of the music, that type of thing. But it's about I know they bought it in about 1966.
Okay.
But I've got it, and it still plays. My kids were amazed with it.
Wow.
What is this? You know, it was like,
wow.
Hey.
So the RCA Entertainment Center, that
right.
is from 1966, that's the same one that Elvis had.
Right, yeah.
Right there, I would say $20,000.
Right.
I'm not good at this game. That's why we have... Greg here.
Yeah, I, you know, that's something I've never, you know,
and
seen.
And it's got
that.
The 8-track player in it, too, and it all works.
Right.
Everything in it works. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and that's what's great about the vintage stuff is they made it to last. And
yeah, right.
You know. I'm trying to find one here. I'm probably not going to be able to find it. But,
well, same thing. Go to Andersonville.
Right.
Every third storefront is going to be a boutique furniture place. And go, I've got this. And they'll go, we'll give you $1,000 and they'll sell it for $3,000.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's what I was going to say about $1,000.
Fanatic.
Yeah, and then some joker like.
This out of the mansion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, there you go. And joker like me come along and be like, $3,000, that's a deal.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Thanks,
all
Jim.
Right, man. Well,
thank you, buddy.
You guys, good show.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Gary. Gary, what do you want to brag about, Gary?
Well, I've had this piece for about 30 years. It's an Emmy Award that was never given out. It was never plated. It is straight from the factory, and it's never been plated, and it is in mint condition. It's just there. It needs to have gold on it.
Why? What's the backstory? Did you just find it? How do you have it?
No. I used to make deliveries there, and this was like in their showcase, and everybody was telling me that, no, you can't, if any employee ever walked out with anything out of this place, and I don't want to give the name of the company,
but
it's in Chicago, and an employee, after hours, just gave it to me. He says, just take it, put it on your coat and leave.
As a tip for like delivering pizza or something, right?
You could say you're a writer on Dynasty.
Right. Do you happen to know what year that might be, that award?
Well, no, all the Emmys are identical except the base has changed.
Yeah, right.
And this is just like a square base, maybe about 4 inches by 4 inches.
Yeah, I know what that looks like. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to find what a regular Emmy goes for.
Yeah, what? I mean, you always talk about, do they melt it down? But that's if it's gold plated, but this isn't gold plated, so we can melt down.
No, this is before the plating. It's like was like a model they might show
or
something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can't find an Emmy. An Oscar has gone for $240, and oddly enough, as goes on Swap Meet, an MTV VMA award goes for like $2,000.
Of course.
Right. It just, there's no sense.
Stupid astronaut,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
So, all right, well, that's cool, Gary. That's an awesome brag. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
But there's no, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be worth anything, to tell you the
truth. Yeah, if you do sell it online, make sure you do an auction because you don't know how high that could go.
Okay, there you go.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
There's an Emmy at my old radio station because I worked with Ira Glass, and he did This American Life, and he did a Showtime version of it.
Okay.
And they won the Emmy for it. So they put it in the case next to all of the other awards for the radio station. So you have all these goofy-looking awards. They're like, hey, the Regional Association of Broadcasters Award for Best Use of Sound. You know, and then the Emmy.
The Emmy, right.
Yeah, so we would always, if anyone came through, that became like a party stop on the tour to be like, would you like to hold an Emmy?
Nice.
And we had the idea one time. I wanted to do this. I never did it out of respect for Ira's Emmy that was there. Is I wanted to get a bunch of guys dressed up in suits or like, you know, almost like tuxedos.
Right.
Like everyone wear their tuxedo and then grab that Emmy and just show up at bars everywhere. You know, like on a random Saturday night holding up like, we did it, even though it's not Emmy time.
Yep.
Like just to see how people react. We didn't.
Free drinks, yep.
All right, let's keep going here. 312-981-7200. Lissa says, this is from 630, she says she has a first edition of Origin and History of Beer and Brewing, J.P. Arnold, 1911. Wow, look at this thing. She sent a picture, too. It's like old, look at this. It's like it's great, great book. Origin and History of Beer and Brewing, J.P. Arnold, 1911. That's what we're talking about right there. That's a good one.
It is.
So that's great. I like that one as Greg gets that one. I'll keep going here. 847 says, I have a Black Sabbath reunion CD from sometime in the 90s, signed by Ozzy Osbourne and all the other members of the band at that time. Then they say, do you know how much I could sell it for? CJ in Buffalo Grove.
Okay.
So that's two of them there.
Let's see. the book is looks like it's sold for $25 to $30 before. Mm-hmm. I mean, I
should
would think it's more than that, but they might have priced
too.
It low. Yeah,
origin and a history of beer and brewing. That's
right,
awesome.
And it probably wasn't first edition, so yeah. That would change it. The Ozzy thing, yeah. I mean, I could see that CD would probably be an $80 to $100 to start CD.
Really?
And especially signed, it could be hundreds to start.
It's a reunion CD, so they put out like a CD in the 90s. It was like, we're back.
Yeah, I heard recently, just like today, that he's doing, the very last tour now.
This is the very last tour.
Until next time.
Until the next time. Exactly.
Right.
All right, so the origin of history, beer and brewing, $15 to $20 or $25 to $30, whatever you had there, not much. And maybe $80 to $100 for the Black Sabbath reunion CD signed by the members of Black Sabbath.
Yeah, and I would start there. It could go higher than that.
I heard, and it might have been the new Justice League trailer. It was one of the trailers that I was just looking at, and they had the Black Sabbath track on there. And I was like, how do they get that song? And why would you spend what I would think that much money, how much it would cost to get that song? You know what I mean? Like, I know it's a great song, and they do a great song, but you can't find, like, a knockoff version of that to, like, just get the same. I always wonder about that with trailers and movies. It was like Suicide Squad. Every song on that, you're like, wow, that is a monster Led Zeppelin song, right. Creedence song, and they must have spent a lot of money.
Yeah, I heard the stories, like, with School of Rock, the hoops they had to go through to get Zeppelin songs and AC/DC songs for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I saw the trailer for the play for School Rock, and I just want to point out, as a musician, they are using a Les Paul in that promo they're doing, and it was an SG. It was a Gibson SG on School Rock cover, and I'm like, this is blasphemy. You know, I'm sorry. I digress.
Greg getting off.
I know,
man.
But I was like, man, they're using a Les Paul. What? They're made by the same Gibson company. You know, why couldn't they just use the original guitar?
Sounds
right?
Like someone just copy-paste, put this on there.
Right. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Greg Flamm, at DuPage Picker. I'm a guest every Wednesday night doing the swap meet, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on Rob's news. We'll come back for the second half. What do you want to brag about? Time to call in. Stay with us.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flamm.
Let's do this.
Let's do this. The second half of Swap Meet is on. Greg Flamm can be found at DuPage Picker, both at Facebook and Twitter. 312-981-7200. This is our segment we do every Wednesday where we evaluate, find out how much your junk is worth.
Yes.
Let's go to Adam. Adam, why don't you start us off? What do you want to brag about, Adam?
Well, man, it's not junk, but it's you guys are talking about guitars, and I was like, man, I just wrapped up band prep because I got to call this in.
Yes.
I have a 68 Gibson SG, which is almost identical to the Angus Young one with that big, you know, silver piece. I don't know if you want to geek out on guitars, but
yeah, let's do it.
It's pretty mint, man. It's we've had it in the family. It's got the lift-in case, which is, you know, kind of notable for those.
Okay.
And it's pretty much mint. It's got a little buckle rash on the back. I mean, if you're talking industry terms, and
right.
It's beautiful.
I mean, that's to be expected. I mean, they're going for like $5,000-$6,000, you know, 1968 SG.
Wow.
I'm trying to find one that actually sold recently.
What is a guitar from the 60s? I mean, what's the upper echelon guitar from the 60s?
Oh, they could be $12,000.
Well,
what brand?
59 Les Paul, man. You got a $250,000 guitar. When the market changes, that thing changes.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, and the market.
I know nothing about it. I know nothing about guitars. Fender Stratocaster, right? That's a big guitar.
Yep.
A Gibson, of course, the other one you just
Les
mentioned,
Paul.
Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the top three. Is there any others that actually make or that are collectibles?
Yeah, Gretsch is another brand that's very collectible. Rickenbacker, drawing a blank on some of the other brands. But yeah, those are the main brands there. But yeah
Martin, vintage Martin.
Right, especially the older acoustic Martin, yeah.
Awesome.
But yeah, that's cool that you have one. And I just digressed on that because the cover, the classic iconic cover of School of Rock is with an SG. And I was just like, why couldn't they just use that?
But do they have the pick of destiny?
right. Oh, I haven't seen the play, and I don't know if I plan to, but that would be funny if they did.
There you go. Thanks, Adam. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling in. There you go. 312-981-7200. All right, let's see what we got here. 773 says, shortly after the Apollo 11 mission in 1969, I sent Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins letters asking for their autographs. They each sent me back 8x10 photos with their written signature. I sealed each autograph photo in an envelope, so they remain in mint condition nearly 50 years later.
Wow.
Any idea on what the value would be? Bob from Northbrook. What do you think on that? That's a great story, Bob. Thank you for sharing.
It is. If you kept them in that condition for that long... I think he mentioned it was three separate photos signed.
8x10s.
Yeah, as a group, it could be 300 to 500 to start.
For the group of
them? For an auction, yeah, if you sell them as a group. Hmm. Or start them at like 150 each and see how high they go. And it's kind of hard to look that up, because you just have autographs of those but as a group and in that condition.
It's nice, though.
But it is, yeah. Good brag.
All right. 262 says, how about a pewter chess set of original Disney characters?
Yeah, those are neat. There's a few of them on there. They're going for $250 to $450 for the complete set.
Wow.
But some people are just selling individual, characters of the set, for $80 to $100 a piece. I guess they're getting more individually than
just
as
by
a set.
Selling a piece?
Yeah. So.
Well, that just ruins the game.
Yeah, but...
Now when you want to pull that out, you got to use a penny.
Parts is parts,
right? That's where the rook would be. That's not a rook anymore. That's a quarter.
Right. Well, we did that with Monopoly pieces playing that.
All right, let's try George. George, what do you want to brag about, George?
I have this first edition. Good evening, fellas.
Good morning. Or evening.
I have this first edition by Lou Sarrett.
Okay.
The poet. And it's personally inscribed for Mrs. Henry Justin Smith, that you may know was like a patron of the arts back in those days. At the bottom it says Ravinia. December 1931.
What year are you talking about?
December
1931. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
This is not Greg Flam's wheelhouse.
Right.
I know this from doing the swap meet for 2 years, that Greg is this is where he doesn't, when we talk about first edition books and poetry and stuff like that.
Books put me to sleep. I crack one open, I'm out.
Okay, that's
no, but true. I did find it. I did.
Listen,
I was able to find
it.
What
do we got?
Someone's asking $4,000 for one.
How much?
$4,000. Yeah.
What?
But then there's two others that are only $8. So obviously they're not first edition, but they're saying first print.
This is a first, but no jacket or nothing.
Yeah. But I can't find any sold. But there's three available right now. From two are $8 and one is $4,000. So. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and so I hope we helped you narrow that down from $4,000 to $8.
Yeah,
pick
range,
a number in between.
Quite a range, but I'm glad we could help you out, George. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thank you so much.
That's a good
one. Bye-bye.
Good one. All right, Joe, what do you want to brag about, Joe?
Hey, haven't talked to you guys in a while.
Yeah, how's
hockey
it going,
games,
bud?
Whatever.
Hi there.
I know, right?
This is Joe from his man cave.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
And some of the previous calls have been rather simple for you guys, I think, relatively speaking. But I got a toughie for you. Lost the paperwork on this baby. Bought it about, 40, 45 years ago. It's a 3.5 to 4 foot mahogany whale, three-dimensional, mounted on a steel post.
4 foot mahogany whale?
Yeah.
Like the whale? Like a
As a sperm
shaman?
Whale?
Okay, sperm whale. Got it.
Yeah. On a steel post, mounted on a quartz like a marble brick, if you will.
Okay.
Lost the paperwork, so I don't remember who the artist was. But I remember I brought this in Oak Brook Art Festival, if you will.
Okay. Wow.
And the guy just did nothing but seafaring stuff, if you will.
Okay.
Seagulls, Galapagos Island stuff, if you will. And it's mahogany. And, I paid $450 for it.
Wow.
And I was just wondering if you guys have any possible way to trace that without a name. You know.
Yeah.
It's a toughie.
I like that you're going to the Oak Brook Art Fest.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, hey, what's going on with that 4-foot whale?
It's a shadow of what it formerly was. You remember the fountain in the center of the Oak Brook Mall?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They used to have around that circle.
They don't have that anymore?
They do, but it's a shadow of what it was in the past. Stone sculptures, whatever.
Yeah.
And this guy was just, you know, everybody was standing around looking in awe of your stuff.
I like that every time you call in, Joe, you give us something more that gives us much more of a glimpse into your personality.
Because
you've called in with such the weirdest stuff in the swap meet where you've collected over time. Didn't you have the longhorns?
Yep,
yeah,
you got it.
Yeah, you had a lot of interesting things that you've collected over the years.
The auction.
Exactly. Perfect for this. All right. Well, what do we
obviously
got?
Obviously, I can't find anything close to that.
I had a little, you know, a glimmer of, you know, hope that you might have somebody to trace it. But, you know, without the paperwork, without the artist, you have no clue.
Yeah, okay. If you want to write through the Facebook, I'll do some more research.
I say we take it to one of the arts organizations that gives money for documentary films. And then the three of us, we make a documentary film trying to find the artist of the 4-foot-long whale.
There we go.
Beautiful, guys.
Yeah, nice. Sounds good. Thanks, Joe.
Yep. Adios,
thanks for calling.
Where? We'd make a Moby Dick reference. It'd be like our white whale or something.
Right.
And I'll do the voiceover. And it'll be like this. It'd be like, but where? Where was the whale made? I think it'll be very upsy downsy. It'll be really good. I think we're on to something.
Let's start our
own media company. 312-981-7200. All right. We still have some great stuff coming in here. 262. We'll go to the break with the any value for the Vern Troyer autograph photo, which he's texting a couple times with that gem.
Yeah, that has been,
He's enjoying that bit. He keeps going back to it. All right. We got some stuff. We got some hankies from the 50s. We've got a first edition copy of O.J. Simpson's autobiography signed. We've got a Schwinn Breeze ladies bike, 3-speed from 1968. So we got some stuff to get to coming up here as we wrap up the swap meet. Stay with us. It's a swap meet here as we wrap up. 720 WGN. Greg Flam in studio at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. 312-981-7200. You got a couple minutes. We'll play until the end of the hour here. All right, so let's get through some of these. 262 says, okay, I'll retire the Vern Troyer bit, but I thought for sure that one of these times you guys would want to buy it. I'll save it for my grandkids. I don't have grandkids. I'll just give it to somebody else's grandkids.
Okay. Nice.
Good bits, 262. Good bits.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 815 says, hello, guys. I got a signed first edition copy of O.J. Simpson's autobiography, The Education of a Rich Rookie. It's in great shape. His original dust cover. I have no idea if it has any value. Just curious.
Yeah, I couldn't find that book, but a signed book by O.J. in general is $30 to $60.
Hmm.
But I couldn't find that
book. How many books did he write?
I don't know. I forget the name of the other ones that were coming up.
It's amazing you go back and you see all of the advertising, like TV advertising he was on in the 70s and 80s.
Yep.
Hertz?
Rental car, yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yep.
414, I've got a Schwinn Breeze ladies bike, 3-speed from 1968. Good condition.
Yeah, roughly $400 for that.
$400?
Yeah, not bad.
That's great, right?
Yeah.
Is that what a bike goes, like it's the bike from the 60s goes for?
Yeah, some can be more than that. I think they said, it was a 3-speed, so that could make a difference as well.
It was a 10-speed. Did they make 10-speeds back
five,
in the 60s?
And 10, well, 60s, I don't think so, maybe 70s.
I remember when it was, early 80s, you got a 10-speed, that was high tech.
Yep.
High tech.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had a Fuji 10-speed. And you know what I did, which is such an idiot move? Not really. She had it forever, right? And one day, she was trying to get me to ride a bike in the city.
Okay.
She's like, oh, it's good for exercise. I'm like, I don't want to ride. I'm not the guy who's going to be on your left, like I'm going downtown Chicago, right? And so I came home one day, and it was just there. It was like in my condo. Like she'd come over. My wife was there, and she like gave us the bike. And it was just kind of crappy. And I was like, I don't really want this bike. So I took it downstairs, and I needed new tires and all that.
Yeah.
And I put it, like, our condo had a, this is our old condo, it had like a bike rack. And she could put stuff on. Everyone had their stuff tied up. And there were millions of bikes down there. Just okay. Millions, right? So I just kind of slotted it in there. And when I moved a couple years ago, I just left it there. Nice. I was like, well, if they want to get, it's not locked up. Someone can grab it. It's a reclamation project. But it's probably still sitting there because who's going to actually take it?
That's funny that, you know, when you don't want the bike, it's going to stay there forever. But right. When you want the bike, someone's stealing.
I'm going to sneak back in there and figure it out and be like, who stole the Fuji?
Yeah. Yeah, right. It looks like Fuji 10 speeds are like $100 these days.
Oh, I could have got $100 right. out of it. That's like a family of three over at Portillo's.
Right.
Could have made that happen. All right, yeah. Let's go to Karen. Karen, what do you want to brag about, Karen?
Well, I'm not bragging. I'm inquiring on if there's any worth to a, seems like a resin toilet seat that's got actual coins in it in a pattern.
Wow.
Half dollars, quarters, nickels, pennies.
It's a toilet seat?
Toilet seat with coins in it.
The coins are like a see-through, and you can see like there's coins inside.
Oh, yes. You can see both sides of the coins.
Oh, wow. That is a thing. I'm seeing them now. Anywhere from $270, well, $80 actually, upwards of $430.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Minus how much the coins are worth.
And yeah, and there are seats that have dollar bills in them too, like Lucite. Built into
where is
the
this
toys.
A thing? I've never seen this.
I never heard of this until
or
now.
Are these old items?
Well, they're online. I don't know. Have the year? Let me see if I can find years on these.
This one's got to be 40 to 50 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, they're not showing dates on that. So yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a thing though. There's quite a few online.
Yeah, there you go.
Then it may be worth a couple of bucks, is what you're saying.
Yeah, anywhere. If yours is older, I would say you're probably $200 to $300.
Oh, okie dokie.
Are they U.S. coins, or what kind of coins are in there?
Regular half dollars and quarters and nickels and pennies.
Okay.
Yeah, you're probably $200 to $300. I mean, because the coins themselves, if you have a half dollar, you know, like pre-54 half dollars, those alone could be $25 to $50 each just for that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but we don't want to break up the seat.
Right. I know, but I'm just saying the combined value of the
that's life, Karen. Seat. You got to make a choice.
Do we break the toilet seat?
Either break the toilet seat to get the cash. You know the old saying. Right. Do I break the toilet seat to get the cash right. or try to sell
but
the whole toilet seat?
Isn't that a Snoop Dogg show coming out?
Let's sell it.
Yeah, sell it online. You sell. Put it on eBay.
All righty. Well, thank you for your
Karen.
Very information. Your
you
whole
go.
Show was super great.
Awesome. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. All right. 312-981-7200-219 says, can you please look up Lincoln Logs? Pre-80s. I have a 1978 box, all unused, 212 pieces.
Wow.
They say you can let me know next week. Like, thanks.
Well, that was kind of them.
That's kind, Philip. Thank you. 773 says, I got Topps baseball cards from 1963, 64, and 65, autographed by approximately 30 players on those teams. I will never sell them. Just wondering.
Okay.
They live by Midway Airport. The White Sox would take off on Sunday night to their next destination. So 10 neighborhood kids, we'd have the whole team to ourselves. That's awesome.
That is, yeah. I was at Midway when they came back from the World Series. Houston, I was there. Midway, yeah, that was awesome. Burley in his pickup truck.
That's right.
They all drove their own like cars or had people pick them up.
I had Burley on. I did an interview with him at Wikipedia Files where I just fact-check your Wikipedia page. And I think it was in the Wikipedia page where he told us that when he's from Missouri.
Yep,
and he loves St. Louis. Yeah, he loves the pickup truck. And he's known to roll around when it's bad weather to be able to help people out of ditches. Like he hooks up the back because he loves pulling the people out.
Nice.
I don't think he's got like a, I'm sure he's got a great heart, but I think it's more like, look how much torque this truck's got.
I'd like to know, is he using the truck that the Sox gave him?
Yeah, right. I don't know.
On his way out or his own truck?
And then a 708 says an autographed Steelers mini helmet.
Hmm.
By Coach Cower.
Okay, yeah.
The only,
$50 maybe, $40 bucks.
All right, so we'll look into that, Philip, and find out about the Lincoln Logs. Mm-hmm. And on the baseball cards, 63, 64, 65.
Yeah, those are the years you want. Anything pre-80s, you know, or pre-mid-70s are the good years you want to have. So
right.
I can't give a price on it, but those are the good years.
Those are the good years for value, bad years for funny names, right? 80s is hands down.
Right, 80s, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe those cards aren't worth anything, but the hairstyles alone.
right.
Greg Flamm, always a pleasure to see you, buddy.
Yep. Come out and see me at Palatine, Wolf's.
All right, you're indoors now, huh?
Yeah, indoors all winter.
All right. He's at the Wolf's in Palatine. You can also find him online, both at Facebook and Twitter. He's at DuPage Picker with us every Wednesday. See you next week. Greg Flamm.
Thank you.